What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And today's special guest, we have Jonathan Canlis. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, yay. How's it going, guys?
Good, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I want to start off by saying I've been a huge fan of you and your work for years and years.
Same.
When I first got back into shooting film photography specifically, a friend of mine was like, you got to check out this guy, Jonathan. And I literally poured over your blog, got your book, got the t-shirt. Like, it's serious. So thank you for joining us on the show.
Right on.
But for our listeners who might not know you, can you give us a background on yourself and how you got started in photography?
I'm trying to think of a version that people haven't heard already. So I'm Jonathan Canlis. I live in a town called Payson, Utah. I started shooting, quote unquote, professionally. Like, I shot my first wedding in the summer of 1999. I was trying to earn enough money to go on a study abroad. Not to really study, but to basically go see bands and shoot bands and stuff like that, in London.
Oh, man. Great idea.
Yeah, right? Why would I go to London? I'm not there to see Les Mis. I'm there to go see Modest Mouse, whoever's playing at the time. Let's see. I guess the thing that maybe sets me apart is that literally I'm 100% analog. I don't own a digital camera other than this thing called an iPhone 6 Plus S is what I think it is. But everything that I shoot is always on film. There isn't another option for me, and not because that's the cool hip thing to do. That's just all I know.
Right.
It's been that way from the get-go. That's not to say that I haven't attempted to shoot digitally, maybe 3 times in my career, but I'm so far into it, that I'm not, it's not something I ever really want to do. Not that there's anything wrong with it.
Right.
I just really enjoy the process of being behind a camera instead of sitting inside of a chair trying to figure out how I want to edit or take my images. I let my film stocks, how I expose, how I develop it, kind of dictate the look that I want. So I don't know. Other than that, I own a lab. I own the Find Lab, which also obviously helped shooting film. But that's only been, honestly, a recent thing. That opened in... God, when was that? 2012, I think it was. And we didn't actually... Oh, no, it was 2011. We went public in 2012. So I say it was private in the fact that I used to do a workshop called Film Is Not Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the first one was in March of 2008 when film was wildly popular,
Yeah.
So there weren't a lot of options for labs at that time. And I, was up there preaching to all these people, for you to get better, you need to start shooting for yourself, aka shoot personal work. And, the option of sending it to Walgreens or Walmart really is, it's a crapshoot. It could be good. It could be bad. So we opened up a lab, hired a bunch of friends of mine, and we were private until it got big, and it seemed like we were these elitist people, and I didn't want to be that because it wasn't we're private and it's only us, It's just what it was, I think we only had 5 employees at the time, and now we employ 35 people. So
whoa, that's awesome.
it's really great. Like, film is definitely very much alive in 2019. So it's cool. I love it. And like I said, I don't do it because it's cool. I do it because it's a lifestyle to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not this trend, or like, I'm not doing things that I'm like, oh man, in like 5 years, I'm gonna be like, shit, that was super gimmicky. Like, that's, I think, what I love about film is that it's pretty straightforward.
Right.
You know, like, I can go back into a portfolio 10 years ago and I'm like, wow, it's a decent color. It's good exposure. There isn't anything that's like piss yellow skies or like
right.
selective color or anything like that. I don't know. I don't have any regrets shooting film.
Oh man. Remember selective color?
Oh yeah.
Remember when that was a thing?
Yeah.
Woo.
So there, that's who I am.
I never thought of it that way, because it's so funny. I was scrolling back through my Flickr archives, and you can tell like when the film just took over,
because right.
I got into the digital realm and, you know, went for it with that. I mean, that's kind of how I relearned photography again. And but you can see just like awful over like produced photos to like beautiful black and whites and like nice colored photo. It's like just the wave of change that takes over mm-hmm. in my feed. It's funny.
Yeah, it's
I nice. Forgot about that. I always forget about that time.
As we rightly should, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
let it die on Flickr. It's
leave
okay.
it alone on Flickr.
yeah.
So, Jonathan, do you still do the Find workshops? When was the last one that happened?
I don't do them in physical, like they actually ended. I the last one was
that's what
in
I thought. I wasn't sure.
February of 2015 in Berlin, of all places.
Whoa,
man!
Yeah, awesome. it was crazy, man. It was a really cool ride. Like when it first started, like I did two a year, and the first two that I did were in Hawaii, which is where I like kind of lived when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just kind of exploded from there. Instead of doing like two times a year, it was like once a month.
Whoa.
And it went all over the globe. It was kind of nuts. It was really cool. I ended up, like, I think over the 7 year span, there were over 700 attendees.
Damn. So
yeah,
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. It was really cool, man. Just because it's cool to see a lot of people get behind an idea that, like I said, when I started in 2008 was wildly unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Like I would get like hate emails from like digital dudes, you know, with like ponytails and like long lenses. Like, I can't believe you're doing this workshop. It's so stupid. Like, no one cares about film. And like, I don't even know where that guy is now.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
He works at like Costco, and I'm here talking to you tonight about film. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, if you have to explain it to somebody, it's like you don't get it. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's just funny that someone would take the time out of their day to be like, I'm going to email this guy and give him a piece of my mind mm-hmm. about something that's so like, were you offended? Like, did you feel somehow challenged that I'm doing this workshop? I don't know. It was just strange to me, but
that is so strange. I don't understand that.
The
internet is so nuts when it comes to stuff like that.
Well, it does make sense. Cause if you go onto a handful of like Facebook groups, you're like, oh, there's that guy in whatever this version of
yeah.
he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it is what it is, but.
So were the workshops getting too crazy to keep up with?
So I don't know if you know this. I'm married and I have six kids.
Mm-hmm.
So like that travel where I'm gone at least like a week and a half, for especially if it was like an international thing, it just was too much. So I turned it into an online thing, which was really great because now I can just do it from home, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And there's like PDFs and like videos, and it's called Finding a Box. But
well, you just launched something today, didn't you?
I did.
Yeah.
I just launched a new guide. It's called Find Meaning, which is basically all about shooting personal work,
which is super important. We love talking about shooting personal work on the show.
I mean, it's the only thing, because I don't care what it is that you do for money for cameras. That's not why you picked up a camera.
Right.
It's not like no one decided to pick up weddings because whatever, I hate Saturdays and I love brides.
Right.
No. You know, someone threw money at you and you're like, well, fucking cool. I can like make money in the thing that I absolutely love, you know? So I feel like, and not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with whatever you do professionally. It's great. But you always need to look at this as a stepping stone to get you to be able to do what it is that your dream job. Like if money's out of the equation, what are you going to pick up your camera to go shoot? It's not a wedding.
That's a good point.
It's not family photos of somebody that you don't know. It's not.
Yeah.
It's going to be photos of people that you care about, or like, you know, stories that you have access to. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things is I feel people need to start thinking about, you know, you work really hard to get into your, whatever it is, the genre that you're in, build this career and build a name for yourself. But I think you need to equally work as hard to get out and also start shooting what it is that you really care about. Like, because if you're a wedding photographer, you shoot for 15 years. At the end of 15 years, what do you have? You have a portfolio of photos that you may or may not care about.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say on the latter end, you're probably not going to care about them.
Right.
You know, did you take the time to pick up your camera and go shoot for yourself and tell the stories you wanted to tell? Or did you just, was it just a job like everybody else, you know?
I think that's what people forget about the whole thing.
I don't.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. You don't. Yeah, but you know.
Yeah, I don't. I shoot strictly personal work, and it's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
It makes me not hate it. You know, like it's not a job to me. So I could be. I mean, we talk about it all the time. I especially say that it's just like if this would. I mean, I get it. I get making money at a profession like being a wedding photographer. Like that's pretty badass because you know not just shooting the photos, like getting to spend the day with like. Awesome people and mm-hmm. like see all the love and all that stuff. Like I get it. It's great. But like, man, I don't want to like hate photography. Like I'm not, if my boss is listening, I don't hate my job.
But let's be honest, like anyone else, like, and it doesn't matter if you're a photographer or anything else, like 85% of your job is a paycheck.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, 15% of it is like, oh my gosh, this is the greatest thing ever. This is what I'm gonna do for the rest of my life. So, like, for you to come in and, like, expect that your career as a photographer is going to be this Instagram life of you living your best life, it's a joke, you know? Like, there are – now, I'm not saying, like, all the gigs that I shoot are like that. They're awesome. It's great. I'll never complain. Someone is paying me money to push a button.
Right.
Like, that's incredible, you know? But that body of work may not be as important as, say, the body of work I shoot of my family. Or like if I decide to get involved in some activism with like murdered and missing indigenous women, which I've been working on for the last 3 years, like that body of work to me is leaps and bounds more important than what I'm getting quote unquote paid to do.
For real. Yeah. Yeah. I feel that all the time. Like there's so much more pride and enjoyment when there's no weight on your shoulders of having to complete it by so and so. I mean, other than your own stipulations of like, you know, I want to wrap this up by 2020, you know, other than that, that's what keeps me fueled. People all the time, they're just like, dude, you're so passionate. I get messages on Instagram and I thank you guys so much because it just makes me happy that like you see how passionate I am about this stuff. But like, I don't think I'd be that gung ho if it was, you know, if it was my 9-to-4. I know I wouldn't be that gung-ho. So like I agree 100% with what you're saying.
And if I was to take that even further, I don't think you would be gung-ho if you felt, I mean like for all three of us, you know, I don't know you two all that intimately. I just met you tonight, but I'm assuming there's a different feeling when you're shooting film versus when you're shooting digitally. When you're shooting film, every one of those clicks, regardless if you own a lab or not, it's going to cost you money.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. And so you're going to be super intentional, or at least I would hope that you're responsible enough that you're intentional,
right. You know,
where with the digital, like, I don't care how disciplined you are shooting film, you hand someone a digital camera and I don't care. You're going to start taking an extra one.
Yep.
And another extra
one.
And another extra one.
And spray and pray. Like,
well, I'm not saying you're going to get to the spray and pray point, but you're definitely going to be taking more photos, which to me equates to more editing and more culling. Like why? Like I love the idea of showing up with one roll of film and shooting it.
Yeah.
It's 12 shots. Like for me, I shoot a lot of squares, 6-6. So it's 12 photos. And like 12 photos to me is I'm not taking doubles of anything.
Right.
Like when I hit it, that was it. And if it didn't turn out, it didn't turn out. But like when I cull it, worst case scenario, like I'm gonna delete 3, you know?
Yeah.
And everything else is where it should be, you know? Where with digital, like just the idea of wanting to shoot personally digital when you're going to have to go through and cull 5,000 images. No, thank you. I'm done. I have no desire. Like, that's why I feel like a lot of people that I do talk to, I'm like, hey, do you shoot personally for yourself? Like, no, it's because they shoot 100% digital. And because when they shoot, it's not fun. It's not this thing they look forward to. It equates to more work. You know?
Yeah, I remember.
Can't even imagine that.
I remember like shooting weddings on the difference between shooting a wedding on film and digital. I remember culling and being like, why did I take seven of the same pose? Like, why did I do that? What is wrong?
Even like a pinnacle moment. It's just like he's just standing there.
I feel like it's almost
kind of like, yeah, you might get him blinking or like,
yeah, to make like the client feel better when I'm like, I know I already got it. I don't know why I'm still doing this. But like with film, it's like one, okay, now let's move over here or whatever. You know, it's very intentional. I'm just like seeing like mm-hmm. the same shot like over and over in Lightroom right now.
And like, I don't know how to say it other than like film can kind of make you like over self-confident, mm-hmm. you know, because with digital, like that's, you're taking seven because either you feel you didn't get it or you're not confident enough in your work that where you feel like you could just take one, mm-hmm. you know, where with film, it's like you take one and that's it. And you move on and you're not, at least for me, I'm never like as I move to the next shot thinking, oh shit, did I get that last one?
Right.
Did I get it?
I got it. I'm good. Where with digital, it's like, well, you know, let's just hope we get something.
That's so crazy. Why is it like that? I mean, I did it not too long ago. I shot some food stuff for my boss at the job. She was like, can you just take a couple shots of these new plates so I can throw them up on the website? And I'm like, yeah, sure. And man, just like, you know, just like Chris said, seven shots of the same plate. That's not even moving. Like the plate's not, they're sitting there. Like
digital photography is stealing people's confidence.
Yeah.
It really did. And I was looking at him, I'm like, man, I don't know if I got it. I'm like, I would have never second guessed that if I would have just like shot it on some like portrait or something. Mm-hmm. That's nuts. Ugh. I don't hate digital because we're going to get yelled at now.
Everybody's going to yell at us. It has its place. Like, there are things that digital can do that film can't even touch, especially when it comes to like low light stuff mm-hmm. for some things, especially color.
Yeah. Or these clients in LA who want it to like before I left the job, they want it. Can you upload this wirelessly? Like, no, I don't have that camera.
Which
I have to go home and download.
Another thing I love about film. Can I see the photo? Yeah, in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to see it.
Man, we live in such a crazy world that you can't wait a day. You know what I mean? That they're asking you for photos like that. Mm-hmm, like you're walking out the door saying bye and they're already like, can we get these on Instagram?
Yeah.
Like it's like it didn't even happen.
That's somebody else's fault. Someone just was like, sure, I'll do it. And because that person did it, the next person has to do it. And now we're expected
right.
to, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So whoever that guy is, you know, let's go punch him in the throat.
Yeah. Thanks, dude.
Yeah.
Are you working on any other specific personal projects right now, Jonathan, or is it just mainly like your family all the time? Or
no, man, I'm constantly working on anywhere from 3 to 5 different personal projects.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah. So obviously, like, so with my like family, like I try and get all 6 kids in the frame once a month. I know that sounds like, oh, no big deal.
No, that sounds like a huge deal. What do you mean? You have 6 kids.
Yeah, and they range from like, you know, 7 to like almost 16. So there's lots of different. Anyway, that's a project I've been constantly trying to work on with the whole goal in mind that like once those kids fly the coop, like I'm going to give them a box, you know, of a print from each month for however long they were ever decided to want to do this. Yeah, it's like the best. If you were to ask me, like, what's your best body of work? There it is.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. These images aren't like groundbreaking or like, you know, they're not like super artistic because like a lot, well, some of them I'm really proud of, but it's just basically getting 6 people in a frame once a month. That's all I really care about, you know? And to me, the story is how they're changing. And mm-hmm. like my kids are like, they were tweens for a while, but now I've got like a handful of teenagers. And how they're constantly, you know, puberty is awesome. And
oh,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just documenting it once a month. It's cool to go through like the last 12 images. You're like, wow, you've really changed.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I kind of get a glimpse of who you are going to be as an adult, you know? So, yeah, there's that. But I've got a couple other projects I'm working on. I've been doing, like I mentioned it earlier, like I've been doing this work with this MMIW, which is Murdered Missing Indigenous Women. It's a really crazy thing, but like basically I'm friends with a handful of Native gals who have trusted me enough to bring me along as a male to go in and photograph families who have had
wow.
like horrific atrocities happen, like things you just can't even imagine. It's nuts because like the third highest reason for fatalities among Native women is murder.
Jeez.
Not like cancer, not like, you know, heart disease or whatever. It's murder. So going in and telling these stories, and a lot of this, again, has to do with access, because it kind of started way back in 2016 when I went to Standing Rock to go take photos. A friend of mine who is Native, who actually I shot her engagements like maybe like 10 years prior. I'm not sure when it was, maybe 2008. So maybe 8 years prior. Anyway, I became really good friends with her. You know, like she's just a really cool friend of mine. Her name's Alexis Dyer, but she invited me out to go, and that kind of, I don't know, steamrolled the whole project. And I'm still doing so. Like tomorrow I'm going to go up to Salt Lake. I'm shooting this Native guy who is gay that's running for a certain seat in, I'm not exactly sure, in Salt Lake. And I'm going to go take his headshots and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. I just saw him at Pride last week. He's all dressed up in like his garb, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's cool, man. Like it's just... It's really great to see that your photos go beyond just the basic, like, you know, here's a nice shot of whoever for, because I do a lot of families now. I used to shoot a ton of weddings. That's how I kind of got into this business. I started shooting tons of weddings, and then, you know, 15 years into it, I realized I am not a wedding photographer. Not that I don't shoot them anymore. I still do, but like,
okay,
it's just not, it took me 15 years to figure out I was a family photographer. Right. And so to go through like these kinds of things, it's not mundane, but like they're not like life shattering or like images that are going to bring like social change to anyone. You know, they're heirlooms for people.
Right.
So to be able to have access to projects like this that can actually make people think, make people actually like, I don't know, be provoked to donate and help other families like this. It's kind of cool.
Now, is that project going to be like a book? Or
no, it's an ongoing project. So like, okay, let me just give you an example of one thing that happened. So I was asked to go shoot this rally in at Sundance in 2018. So it's like January, you know, like as I was going there, like I saw like Will Smith's kid. I don't know what his name is, but the weirdo kid, you know,
yeah.
He had his little film camera and stuff. And I'm there to basically document this gathering of women who I assumed were all from Utah who have had someone go missing or murdered. And they were getting up, like, it was just kind of a really cool, I guess, platform. Cause there were a lot of like, you know, it's just a stark contrast of these Native American women who, and families who, you know, are kind of on this lower socioeconomical ladder versus dudes in like coats that cost like, I don't even know how much, you know? So I started shooting this and like was hoping that, you know, I'd be able to tell these stories because they were all local. These women had flown in from all over the states.
Whoa.
Oh,
like
wow.
None of them were from Utah. And I was like, man, how am I going to like take this project a step further, which would basically, in my opinion, go to their home, hear their story,
right,
document their family, and, you know, kind of like raise awareness, have these like in your face kind of portraits that are like, whoa, like if you look at them, you wouldn't think anything. But if I tell you this backstory, you're like, what in the world? Right.
Yeah.
So that happened. And, you know, we realized there wasn't anyone there. So I asked the gal who kind of was the head of it, which her name is Danae. And her auntie back in like 1983. Okay, so listen to this crazy story. They were in this like, they were in like a trailer, you know, it was like a Friday night. I think she was just a couple months shy of her 19th birthday. Her and her mom were like knitting in the trailer and she had a 3-month-old baby. This guy came, cut the power, came in, shot the mom in the head. She survived.
No.
He didn't see the baby.
Wow.
So he didn't shoot the baby. She's alive now. Like the mom is alive and ended up like chasing her aunt all around. Like she struggled, ended up murdering her. Right. So I flew down to Arizona with Danae to go meet their family and like doc it. It's just, it was crazy. Cause I landed in Phoenix and then I had to drive like 4 hours to Sanders, Arizona, which is like middle of nowhere. It's
right.
Like Navajo reservation. Right. Like they met me at a dollar store because they had to take me. They couldn't give you an address of where her grandma lives. Yeah. You know, right, and like right, as I'm driving with them, like they're like going all these back roads. I'm like, oh, dude, they're trying to ditch me. You know? They weren't though, but like it's just all these random back roads, you right. know. And I had maybe 3 hours by the time I got there to the house before it's dark, because I went there I think in February.
Is all right. Was,
of last year, or was it this year? It was last year. But I had 3 hours to tell this story and like somehow honor this aunt who had been murdered, and there was no justice to it. Like the dad had already, like, you know, because it happened on like native land, they kind of had an idea who had done it. They brought these things to the FBI and they just got pushed aside because they were native. Yeah. It's just fucking nuts, man. Like, but that's the thing is, man, like you think about it, you know, let's back up maybe like 10 years ago, or let's go back 8 years ago when no one really was. I mean, I know I have a handful of friends who are activists where there's always something to be, you know, angry about or something to promote so that you can make change. But for me in my life, 8 years ago, everything was happy. I wouldn't ever do any kind of project like this at all because things were fine. But in this climate that we live in now, there's a lot of things for a lot of people that just they piss you off, man. Right. Like, I just can't believe what's happening. Mm-hmm. And to have an opportunity like this to come up, hey, will you come do this? Of course I'll do it.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like I would totally jump at the opportunity if I knew I could take images that could possibly make change.
I was just going to say, that's like the most beneficial thing about, you know, photography or any medium, I guess, really, if you're doing something to show the world, like, look what is happening. And that's incredible. Well,
cool. I mean, if you think about it, though, like, I mean, the both of you, you both have access to a story that none of us would have access to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like in your social circles, there's something that's going on that people, one, they trust you, you know? And so if you showed up with a camera, you and you alone be able to tell that story. Where if I showed up, it's like, whoa, I don't know you.
Right.
This is weird, you know? So I feel like this personal work is all about finding where that access is, finding out where those doors are and opening them and actually getting off your butt and going, doing the shoot, you know?
Man, I think about that every day. Like every day I try to like dig myself into something locally around here that can be told. It's amazing how powerful just like an image is. You know what I mean? Just one photo of what this is along with a couple words is just nuts. I mean, sometimes you don't even need words.
Yeah.
It's just nuts.
And that's the thing. It's I feel like there's this like double-edged sword with social media because I hate social media. I just hate it. But I'm love with it you because... with like, I'm not out there, like, I don't do these projects for likes and or accolades or anything like that. I do this in hopes of it getting in front of the person who can do more than I can.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's only so much I can do monetarily or even in terms of, like, time to be able to be commit to go and do these shoots. You know, like I said, I'm married. I've got 6 kids. I can't just be off and doing these things pro bono, which is they're all, you know, I would never ask for compensation, you know.
Right.
But in a real world, like it's obviously not something I could constantly be doing. But if I do the right project, you know, I can pick and choose and take the photos that are effective enough and that gets in front of the right person. That's where change happens, in my opinion, you know, because someone else can do something more than you can. It's just you getting those photos in front of that person. And I feel social media is that necessity.
You know?
No matter how much you hate it, like it's how things go viral. You know, you're not going to get viral by having a print in your room that you don't show anybody.
Yep.
So true.
Anyway, let's geek out about film. They just announced Akros is coming back.
Come on, let's talk.
I know. I just made a post on my Instagram story saying, isn't anyone else like kind of worried that it's like version 2? Like, is it going to be the same? Is it going to be worse?
So,
is it going to be better? Like, what's version 2 mean? What does that mean?
All I care is that if version 2 is still orthopanchromatic, I don't care what you do.
That's what I've heard that a couple times today.
Yeah,
that exact same phrase right there. So, yeah.
I love Akros so much that, like, right now in my office, I probably have close to 500 rolls still left.
Like kidding.
Like when they said it's canceled, I bought it all up. I didn't buy it to sell it at the lab. I bought it for me, selfishly, because literally that is my favorite black and white film. And I love it because it's orthopanchromatic. Like it's just, So for those of you listening, that you don't know what orthopanchromatic means, it's basically, it has really low sensitivity to red in the UV rays, you know? So like blue people, like, or sorry, not blue people, people with blue eyes or freckles, AKA my wife and or my kids, they just, it looks amazing. It's like that old kind of tin type look, like a lot of that stuff was, it wasn't orthopanchromatic per se, but it kind of has the same look, I guess, or qualities to it. But yeah, I'm really curious to see what they say, quote unquote, what version two is, because their excuse, or sorry, I don't say excuse, their verbiage for why they got rid of Akros was there was a lack of materials. Somehow in 2018, there's a lack of materials. That translates something got expensive and it just wasn't worth it to us.
Right.
You know, like as, so if I step back and be someone who owns a lab, I met with the Fuji like higher ups at WPPI this last March. And we met with them the day after they decided to, you know, up their prices 30%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And no one in that room knew anything really about it because it just came straight from Japan, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of doom and gloom. Yeah. That meeting was great.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But it was cool because, you know, we talked to them and like, what, they were like, what could we do to help? And I'm like, well, stop discontinuing everything.
Right.
And stop raising things double digits. And if you are going to raise something double digits, give me something back. You know, like if you compare the two companies like Kodak and Fuji at the time. So Kodak also made a price increase. It was single digits, but you gave me E100. You gave me P3200 and 35. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to give me E100 in medium format. And I know for a fact that they're going to make P32 in medium format. They already have. They just haven't released it.
Yes.
So this is what I heard from Tim Ryugo. So he was, I don't know if you know who that is. You know who Tim is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
You've met Tim, right? Not the most loud person. But we were at WPPI and he's like, I've seen the film and it's amazing. Like that was his reaction. And I'm like, oh!
Yeah,
I already love it in 35mm.
Me too.
I can't even imagine how amazing it's going to be in 120. Like the grain is going to be incredible. You pull it three stops and it's like, I'm not going to shoot any other black and white besides this.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mind that Kodak had raised their prices because they were giving us stuff back.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You know, there was
That's a really good point.
Yeah, you know, like I have faith in this company. Of course you have to raise your prices. It's cost. I understand it. You know? Yeah. But if a company like Fuji kills everything except Fuji 400H, everything, and then you're going to tell me I'm going to raise your prices 30%? You just gave me the biggest middle finger you possibly could.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And you guys said, hey, is he going to want to edit? I'm not editing that. Like, that's worth it. I kid you not.
We'll leave that in.
You know?
What do you mostly shoot Fuji, Jonathan? Or are you like kind of do both? Or you have favorites of each? Or
yeah, it all depends on what I'm shooting. So like if I'm shooting like a family session of people that are possibly, say, Asian, I'm not shooting Portra. I'm shooting Fuji 400H.
Yeah.
But for the most part, like all of my work is done on either Portra 800, Ektar, Portra 160. I don't shoot Portra 400 all that much. I've tried to, like literally within the last couple months, shoot it because I feel it's like, it's what everybody shoots. It's It's so not boring, but like there's nothing about it that excites me. If I take Portra 800, rate it at 400, push it a stop in the development, the color's incredible. If I shoot Ektar, rate it at 400, push it two stops, it's amazing. I like kind of doing stuff that isn't the normal, you know? Like it's still normal color, but I really like contrast and saturation. So I'm not shooting like Fuji 400H for just normal stuff. It's just it's too bland for me. I like salty.
I'm the same way. My film's got to have some grit to it. Some contrast and some dirt. Yeah.
What about you guys? What's your favorite color neg film?
What's your favorite color film, Chris?
Portra 400.
That's fine. It's great. And this is the great thing about film is that it's like there's enough different stocks out there for everyone's personality and or voice. You know, like. I'm not sorry. I didn't really mean to bag on Portra 400.
No,
There's nothing wrong with it at all. it just, it doesn't fit in what it is that I want to do or how I want to tell my story, you know? And that's not to say that it doesn't work for a gazillion other people, you know?
Man, I'm mostly black and white. If I do jump into color, it's like usually Lomo 800. I'm a big fan of that Lomo 800 film.
I've heard a lot of great things about this film. I've yet to shoot it, but...
For some reason, I heard like years ago that it was like repurposed Kodak 800 or something weird like that, Portra 800. But I could be completely wrong. I just heard that forever ago and it stuck in my mind. But it's not anything like Portra 800. It's it's like heavy on the blacks, like blacks are black and
I like that.
Yellows. It's got like a weird yellow tint to it. Like I don't know how to explain it. It's not like a warm, it's not a warm yellow tint. It's just this like, but it's not, that makes it sound like everybody looks yellow. It's not like that either. It's, if you shoot something that's yellow, like if you're in a laundromat at 3 o'clock in the morning and you shoot that weird lighting that's in there, like it's gonna look very, very yellow and like moody, you know?
It's interesting because I feel like all like Color Neg films have like a base color, you know, like a starting point. Like, and Portra 800 is orange, Ektar is red, you know, Portra 160 is magenta, and Portra 400 is a yellow base. You know, so it's interesting you say that it's a yellow base. It's interesting to see.
I really like Fuji's 400 Superior.
Yeah,
that's like my second favorite color film, and then besides the Lomography F2 400, which is like that's the one I hoarded. I have like way too many rolls. I just got more of it because somebody was selling it on one of the Facebook groups. And my boyfriend was like, you don't need any more film. I'm like, shh, it's going in the fridge.
It's summertime. There's they need a place for all the alcohol. You can't just put all your film in there now.
That's what he thinks.
Man.
Yeah.
You need a little mini fridge, Chris.
I know.
Just your own little fridge.
I'm like looking around, like where could we put it?
You could just slide it right under your desk.
Yeah.
Just put it. It'll fit right there. Just one of those little cubes where you can just put all your Lomo film.
Yeah.
Have you guys dabbled at all in the double film yet?
No.
The double exposure stuff?
No, it's called
There's like the bubblegum kind, the one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's like bubblegum, there's jelly, there's Apollo, there's Pacific. I think there's six different kinds. We just got it, like we were able to get it through Robert's Distributors, which is Ilford.
Yeah.
And so we got a handful of it and a lot of our clients have, it's flying off the shelf, which is crazy. So I decided to try some. And, you know, some of it's a little too much for my like normal straight color.
right.
Palette, but there is some cool stuff to it. I think there's anyway. I know you said you guys are shooting Lomography, so I'm assuming you shoot other stuff than just the basic straightforward Kodak Fuji stuff. You know,
is that like color shift? The bubblegum, does it make it like pink?
Yeah, bubblegum is literally like if I'll have to send you a frame. So I had just recently acquired an X-Pan. Well, it's basically the Fuji TX1, and so like it's 20 frames on a roll, right? But like you should be able to shoot like 22 in my opinion. So like I'll scan like just one frame of just the base and it literally was just a rainbow.
Oh, cool.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
It was a little nuts. I mean, it was great. We went up to Pride.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah, we went up to Pride
2 weeks
ago. I was
like, that's going to be the best film for Pride.
Yeah, and I brought it. I was like, this is going to be great. And it was great, but some of it was a little over the top. I'm like, look, I get rainbows are associated with Pride, but this is too much, you know? Like,
yeah.
Let's tone it down a little. So,
man,
anyway.
It's like unicorns blasting out of the frame.
So what's your favorite black and white film?
Oh, man. It would probably, for the longest time, it was 400 Tri-X, but I definitely shoot more T-Max now, 400.
Really?
Like, all the time. Yeah, and I push it to 1600 and that's just I love the crushed out blacks and just white, like super contrast, like I said. Like basically I'm developing, and when I develop it's basically like taking the contrast bar in Lightroom and turning it all the way up. I just really like, you know, grody, dirty stuff, and I seem to get the most dirt out of T-Max, which is weird cuz it's like a T.
Yeah,
you know,
it's like really
grain.
Fine
it's supposed to
grain.
Be, yeah, but
everything you said, everything that came out of your mouth is not T-Max. So.
Yeah, but for some reason, that's why I would shoot Tri-X for the longest time. And I think something got mixed up when I ordered a brick of film. They sent me T-Max instead of Tri-X, and I was like, no. And then I shot it anyway.
Yeah.
And it ended up being like what I actually wanted, you know?
Really?
Yeah, it was weird. It was like a gift. I was gifted from the gods this like 10 like, pack of want. T-Max. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And same with the P3200 though. Like, I've been shooting this project. One of my friends, her boyfriend passed away, committed suicide, and we have been working on this project throughout the year, like photographing all of his stuff, to the stuff he left behind, to her like in mourning, to, I mean, it's just been like one of the deepest projects I've worked on in a long time. And I've been shooting mostly P3200 with that, minus like the 4x5 stuff I've done. But I know it's like sacrilegious to say, but Ilford, I just haven't been able to get into Ilford in 35mm. Mm. If I shoot it in medium format,
there's a big difference between 35 and 120 and Ilford. Because like for me, the ultimate black and white film is HP5.
Not
at 400. I really find it really boring at 400. If I shoot HP5, I'm pushing it three stops always.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Like it can turn the dankest of situations into what looks like, oh wow, that was really great light. And you go like, I look back and I'm like, that was horrible.
There was no light.
And the quality of the light was horrible, but HP5 push three stops developed in X-Tall is just, haven't tried it, man. Like, and now when I say this, again, medium format only. I don't shoot Ilford in 35 at all. But like back, like what you're saying, that P3200, that's an everyday film for me. I don't care if it's bright outside, like super
that's
sunny.
That's the best thing about it.
Yeah, you can shoot it at any time.
I can literally shoot it in the dark.
Yeah, in the dark or broad daylight, man. Right. I've been shooting it
in the middle of the day.
At like F22 at 1000, and it looks amazing. Yep. It's incredible. Yep. Yeah, I love that film.
Yeah, I think that's my one between that and the Tri-X 400. Those are my two favorite black and whites.
I wish I could get into Tri-X as much as I know a lot of people love it.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's like it. My Tri-X is your Ilford.
Yeah,
like I just haven't gotten into it. I've tried it. It just is not. I don't know. One, you've got Acros. So like I said, I've got like just under 500 rolls. Hoarded a version one.
That's so great.
Version two isn't all that great. But like for me, it's like daylight is Acros, and anything that's questionable where I know I don't have light, it's HP5.
Yeah, that film medium format too, the Acros, like it is a whole other breed. I love shooting the 35mm at 400. I always push it to 400 when I shoot it with the 35mm. Yeah, and I love the way that looks too. It's like a completely different, but see, I didn't get into it as it just didn't fall into my realm, you know, soon enough.
Because
it's
another one
of those films that's like, I've been like a Kodak diehard, you know, I'm always trying to, Kodak's always been my favorite. So I always just try to like brand loyalty with that all the time. And my stepdad, he's like a hardcore Acros shooter, or Acros, whatever it's called. And he's given me like a brick of 35 and two pro packs of the 120. And like,
wow,
damn.
Now I'm shooting through it and I'm like, I see why he loves this film so much. Like it's absolutely amazing. Yeah. But
I've actually never shot it.
Really?
What? Yeah, because there
I'll
was
have a, to send you a, I'll send you well, a roll.
Because there was a time I wasn't really shooting black and white all that much. I was like strictly like on the color stuff. So yeah, I just never picked it up.
It's,
if you want to send me one, Timothy.
It's like magic. Like I see the scene that I'm shooting, and then when you get the image back on Acros, you're like, this is everything that I would have done if I was like a post-processor. Wow. But I'm not, and it's just amazing straight out of camera.
Man.
So like when you were saying you pushed it two stops, did you feel it look different? Because I feel like when you push Acros one stop, or especially two stops, like it loses that orthopanchromatic feel, you know?
Yeah, it turns it basically into, you know, Tri-X. Yeah. Is what it does.
Yes.
Yeah.
The antithesis of anthropanchromatic. Yes. Okay.
Yep. So I'm so used to, like, I don't use a meter unless, like, my camera by chance has one that I'm running around with. So I do a lot of, like, Sunny 16 or, you know, kind of guessing light. And I'm built to know what the sun and light is at 1600, because I shot that for like 6 years straight, just shooting push 1600. So it's really hard for me to go out and shoot a roll of like 100 speed film.
Right.
You know, like it's really hard when I'm like on the full other side of the spectrum. I'm like, how do I meter this? So I'm really trying to break that habit. That's why I'm kind of doing some other different speeds and stuff like that now. Of, you know, you don't learn anything unless you try new stuff. So
that's true.
Trying some new stuff recently.
I need to get the step out of the Portra 400, but which I have, but not enough.
Yeah, I feel like I need you've been doing pretty good at that.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like, I think consistency is key. You know, I think a lot of people coming into film, they're like, "Ooh, I'm gonna buy this mixed bag and like show up to a shoot and then shoot all of these."
Yeah,
you know, it's like five different film stocks, and like there's no consistency or like coherence. Anything to what they've shot, you know, it's like, oh, I shot CineStill in broad daylight and then I shot, you know, Fuji 400H. I don't know why they don't look the same.
Yeah.
Well,
let me tell you.
Yeah.
That's true.
I've been shooting with these two girls too. They're just, one's a coworker of mine and her friend, just kind of going around and doing some portraits with them recently. And I always leave with like the same three packs of film in my bag. Like I never take anything crazy unless like we're doing something different, unless I want to try something different. But like, I mean, if you shoot the same stuff all the time, that's how you kind of gain your style and your, you know, and how you learn to shoot, you know? So I think that is very important to kind of stick with something until you get your 10,000 hours in, and then
it's the same with like zoom versus prime, you know?
Yeah.
Like you're almost better off with little to no options, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And then once you've mastered that, then go on to like, okay, now I can handle my 70 to 200 versus just, you know, my plain old 50.
I can't tell you how many times I've packed extra lenses along with other things and never even pulled it out of the bag.
Or extra cameras.
Oh yeah.
Always.
Always. Every day. Every day when I walk to work, I have three cameras with me.
Speaking of cameras, what are you shooting nowadays, Jonathan?
Oh, God. Okay. Where do I start? Okay. So for like paid work, I use a Pentax 645.
Yeah.
I'm always teetering on the edge of like not normal. So I have the Pentax 645, but I have the Contax 80mm planar on there.
Oh,
that's been modded, and it's only F2. So it's F2 and F2 only.
Whoa.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yes, it is awesome. But like obviously if I have to do groups or something else, then the other camera I use a lot.
You're screwed.
Is the Pentax. Yeah, exactly. You're screwed. So I need depth of field. So I've got the Pentax 672 with the 105. And those are my main like two cameras I'm using for paid gigs. Now, if I'm going to go out and shoot for myself, I bounce right now between, again, that TX1, the Fuji's version of an X-Pan.
X-Pan.
And then I also love my Rolleiflex 6001.
Ooh.
Which, man, no one cared about that camera. I don't even think people care about it now. I picked up a whole, like, mint kit, everything you needed with, like, the PQS lens, which means it, like, syncs with flash at 1/1000th of a second. That whole set was $500 on eBay. Yeah, just like stupid low. I was like, done. Did you guys ever see like there was a Time magazine cover of the Game of Thrones people shot on Ektar?
No.
Yeah, no. I'll send you a link to it. It was maybe a year or so ago.
Yeah, right? It's like, how do we miss that?
It was shot on Ektar on a freaking Rolleiflex 6001. It's amazing.
Wow.
It's freaking amazing. But yeah, I have a problem with cameras because like, if you would have asked me the same question maybe even like 4 months ago, it'd be a totally different question, like totally different answer. Like I would have been like Contax G2, 35mm lens, no questions asked, you know, and my Rolly 2.8C, which I still love both of those cameras, but you just like, I'm as fickle as the weather, you know, like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like a high school boy. I'm like dating a new girl every weekend, you know, it's like, oh, I like this one. I like her. Ooh, yeah. She's nice.
Oh, man.
Not to sound like misogynistic, but that's basically what it is. You know, like I'm going through cameras. Like, I mean, if you guys are analog geeks, you, everyone is guilty of gas. I don't care what anybody says.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. I'm the same way. I have a bunch of stuff that's like, I keep hiding like all my good cameras in my closet now just because I can't keep looking at them like every 5 seconds because then I just want like another one like or just like it, or it's like brother or the newer one, or because you're saying the Pentax 672, like that's on the list now of things. And I have a perfectly fine Pentax just sitting right there, you know, so I have to, guess I kind of have to remind myself every once in a while. I'm going to say, I've been going through that a lot lately where I'm just like going through cameras again. I was on a good track there for a while. I was sticking with the same camera for probably a year straight.
Yeah.
And now I'm back to
I'm very jealous
again.
Of the people who are like, I have an M6 and that's it. I'm like, oh, man. So you just like, that's just what you... And me either, because I feel like, at least for me, when I pick up something I haven't shot in a while, it's like, okay, I'm like re-energized, I'm like inspired again, like, you know what I mean? Just because it feels different, and you're going to get different type of stuff. So, yeah, having the one, just the one, I mean,
it sounds ideal, but I think what happens, at least what I have found, is that like, I just get so sick of my work. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's the same thing. It's so predictable, Canlis. I know exactly what you did. It's time to switch it up. But like what I was going to say was that my wife kind of like, institutes this little rule with me. So it's one in, one out. So if I buy one, I have to get rid of one.
Ooh.
Right? Right?
Ooh.
That makes it a lot easier because you're like, oh, do I really want that GF670 again after I've already bought it and sold it twice? No, I don't. Oh, I don't want it again.
Yeah, buying something and then selling it, regretting it, and buying it again is the worst.
Yeah. There's only one camera that I've absolutely and utterly regretted selling.
And it was
the Rolleiflex 2.8F. I had one that I bought off eBay, was pretty decent, sent it straight to Harry Fleener. And like, I mean, I created probably like 4 years worth of my best work on that camera. But it had like a coating issue on the taking lens. So I was really limited. I couldn't shoot backlit. I'd get this weird flare or like you'd start glowing. So I was like, oh, cool. I found a Rolleiflex GX, like a 2.8 GX, which is like basically the modern version of the F, you know?
Right.
For real cheap on eBay. I was like, oh, I bought this. And it's slightly different, but enough that it threw me off. It like put me in a funk. I'm like, I freaking hate this camera.
Oh, no.
Like, it's not a 2.8F. Sold it. Got the 2.8C. Like it, but it's still not the 2.8F, you know? So if you ever get that feeling of you're like, oh man, I'm sick of it, I'm gonna sell this, just keep it,
put it in the closet so you don't see it.
I sold my Contax 645 and that's the one camera that I like regret selling because I
why did you sell it
just because I like I bought it with the intent of like, I'm gonna shoot weddings with it. And then my work kind of changed when I got to LA. I stopped shooting weddings. I've been doing like a lot of on-set photography and stuff like that. So it was just sitting and I just, you know.
Cash in because it's worth more than what you probably paid for.
Yeah, But I wish I didn't do that because now they're like super expensive.
Yeah, it's
bananas. Oh yeah, I always see them. They're ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I was shooting weddings, you could pick up a kit for like 22, maybe 2,500 bucks.
They're like $5,000.
Like, yeah, they're like 4,000, north of 4,000. Like the inserts, man, I remember from like buying like at KEH, I could buy inserts for like $49. So like $500 bucks.
Wow.
It's like, man, I wish I would have like invested like in like stocks.
Yeah.
Into contacts, you know?
Yeah, because I found a back that I guess I had kept like, oh, I'll sell this separately. Or maybe I forgot I even had it. And I just put it out and somebody paid like $400 for it.
Yeah,
I was like,
what? I would have paid $5 if you would have asked.
Yep.
You could buy a whole Pentax 645N with that. So.
Exactly.
I was just thinking while you guys are talking about this, like, I really hope that, you know, now that this resurgence and pop-up is coming back with film, that we start getting some new cameras or something, man. Like, because it's getting scary. It's getting scarce. You know, everything's getting bought up And I don't think I'm letting go of the stuff in my vault right now. At least I'm going to try my hardest not to get rid of it. So,
well, you think of all the hipsters that, like, you know, make their own axes and, like, make their own jeans. Some of these kids have got to, like, you know, and that's the thing. You think about it. You think about your local camera guy. He's not some young hipster. He's like in his late 60s, waiting for the day to retire. So these young hip kids need to, like, start apprenticing at, like, camera shops and learn how to fix cameras. But I guess, honestly, even if you did learn how to fix it, are the parts still going to be around?
Right.
Yeah. That's always the looming, you know, doom over our heads. But
yeah, thankfully, I feel like there's a ton of, like, Pentax 6.7s out there.
Yes.
And, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I think the trend of the RZ 6.7, that's, like, back sweeping the wave again. Like, everybody's shooting RZs again. So it's like, now's the time to sell one if you don't ever use yours.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because they're
those cameras are too big for me.
Yeah, you're pretty tiny. I don't see you lugging something like that around.
Yeah, there was a while when I shot on the RZ and built, like, a whole body of work on it. And then just one day I was like, peace.
Bye.
I'm done.
We'll be right back with some questions for Jonathan right after this message from our sponsor.
Support for Analog Talk also comes from Polaroid Originals. Go to PolaroidOriginals.com and use the offer code AnalogTalk10 at checkout to receive 10% off your next purchase.
All right, guys, this is a part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from Brian at BCAP Photo. And he asks, do you think it's important to educate your clients on why you shoot film? And then there's kind of like a part two. Or do you just do it for you? And if your clients love it, then you let them know?
Yeah. So in the real world, most of my clients, especially if you're not a photographer, could care less if I'm shooting film.
Right.
They actually, I'll be completely honest. Once they find out, I kind of have to, like, talk them down off the ledge because they're like, what? This is weird. I don't know. Like, how are you going to, I don't want negatives. I want, like, files, you know, like, and I have to tell them, like, look, it's the best of both worlds because it's analog capture and digital post-production, you know? So my clients don't care. Now, my clients do come to me and say, we really like your work. There's something different about it. And to them, that different about it is film.
Right.
Now, whether I have to educate them on that or not, I don't think it matters. You know, your clients don't care. Your clients care what your photos look like. The only people that are come to you to be like, hey, shoot film, are other photographers. Like analog enthusiasts, you know. But a normal, like, person is going to hire, hey, I want you to shoot this wedding. Hey, I want you to shoot our family. Like, when I show up to the gig and I'm, like, loading film, they're like, whoa, wait, what are you doing? Like, just changing film. Hold, please. Talk amongst yourselves, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think it should ever matter.
Right.
You know, to a client. This is a personal thing. You know, this is how I get from point A to point B is up to me. And it's up to my client to trust my process. They don't need to be educated on it in any way, shape, or form. I'm not going to get out there and start talking about f-stops or how, you know, this portrait 100 is going to make your skin just look amazing. Like, come on.
Can you imagine?
No one cares.
God. Yeah.
No one cares. So, you know, film, I think it's a personal choice, you know. I feel there's images that I can only create on film because, one, there's only certain cameras that I can use. Like, the X-Pan is obviously a very unique format. Now, I could shoot that digitally, but, like, that's extra steps that I didn't sign up for, you know. Like, say, my Carl Zeiss lenses – with my, like, Portra film. It's amazing, you know? And, like, I love that I have specific formats that I can shoot. Like, at a family session, I'll shoot 6.45, 6.7, and 6.6, you know? And with never the intention of ever cropping them so that they would all look the same. Like, I shoot 6.45 for this, 6.7 for this, and, you know, I like the different aspect ratios. I hate the idea of, like, shooting and thinking, oh, I'll crop that later. Are you kidding me? I shoot full frame, like, and I put everything in my frame for a reason.
Right.
And I don't do it to, like, sit behind a computer and fix it later, you know? You want to get it done right the first time in camera. So that's my answer to that guy. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, your work speaks for itself.
Yep.
They're hiring you, not what your medium is.
Exactly.
Okay, tough question.
Go ahead,
now,
Chris.
This tough question.
Should I give it to him? Yeah, go ahead.
We talked. We talked a little bit about cameras already, but if you were stranded on a desert island and can only use one for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
Do I have to own it now?
No. No.
I don't think it matters now.
No.
If I could have one camera and I have to shoot it for the rest of my life, can I add an accessory?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay. So hands down, it would be a well-coated Rolleiflex 2.8F with the Rollin R1, so I could do like close-up portraits.
Cool.
That's it.
Good answer.
No questions asked. Carl's eyes sharp, the sharpest. Like I could shoot 2.8 all day, every day, and never worry about it being like out of focus.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Like that camera was just, at least the one that I had. But again, it had that coating issue. So if I had that lens, it didn't have a coating issue. That to me is the dream camera. That's it. Done. 12 exposures all day, every day.
Good answer.
The one that got away.
Yeah.
I love that it like still, it still haunts you.
I know. It really does. I can't even tell, man. Like if I just showed you like the work that I produce on it, like someone's going to fish slap me. Like, what was wrong with you, Candace? Like, it's like that Batman thing, you know, like that meme where he's always slapping Robin.
Yeah.
It's like, what were you thinking?
What were you thinking?
Yeah.
So there's a two part to this question, but I think this might be your answer for that. What are you lusting after right now? What's your white whale camera? Is it the same thing since you don't have it? Or is there something else you got your eye on?
Okay. So I'm okay. Let's back up. So I've been shooting since 1999 and my whole career has been based on me getting on a plane and going wherever in God's green earth to whoever that's hired me.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm flipping that. I've got the foundation poured. I'm building a studio on our property.
Yes.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, man.
That's rad.
It's amazing.
Yes.
So after 20 years of shooting, I'm going to hopefully like, you know, have a place where people come to me. So, there's going to be it's like 18 by 24 foot studio space with all north facing windows.
Yes.
Right. Like amazing.
Oh my God.
That's the shooting area. And in that, happening, I finally want to try and attempt to do tintypes.
Mm.
But before I get into the tintypes, I want to acquire an 8x10 camera with probably just like a 300 millimeter lens because I acquired 60 sheets of Acros in 8x10.
Oh, snap!
What?
That's right.
Shut up. Come on.
So that's the unicorn that I'm chasing after is figuring out the right 8x10.
Yeah.
So that like,
yeah.
And let's be honest, I'll probably just get like an Intrepid.
I was just going to say.
It's not about having, because like you could literally like buy what it's going to cost to build my studio 8x10 cameras. Like,
right.
They're just ludicrous, you know? So, and it's just a box with a bellows. That's all it is. So probably an Intrepid 2 with a 300 millimeter lens. I'd like to get the Zeiss one. I think it's a 4.5 300 millimeter lens. And then finally shooting my 8x10s that I have sitting in my office. Right?
Yeah.
Right? Acros 8x10, it's over. It's
done deal.
It's as good as it gets.
I just had a tear go down my cheek. I just wept right there.
August, man. August, the studio will be done. Come to Utah. I'll take your picture.
I'll be out.
We'll get a portrait together.
Yeah, I'll make it happen.
Oh, that would be so awesome. That would be so much fun.
Right?
That's so exciting. Congrats on that.
Yeah. I'm super stoked. Finally, like a space. Because I'll be honest, like right now, my office is the laundry room.
Yeah.
So I run my international business out of a laundry room.
Yep.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love it. That just gives me hope. Yeah. And I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
The space that I see you in right now is super legit. Like if I was to be sitting where you are, there'd be like a double stack washer and dryer behind me.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
my kids' clothes everywhere. Yeah. And like, it's not very professional. So.
I fought for the spare bedroom, so
yeah.
There you go.
It's a man cave.
It looks nice, man.
Yeah, for real. Thank you.
This has been awesome, Jonathan. Thank you again for taking the time to chat with us.
No problem.
We really appreciate
it. I hope it was what your listeners were looking for. So.
Oh, absolutely. Where can everybody check you out?
Okay, let's see. I'm not very good at this self-promotion thing. Instagram, I guess, is probably the best place. I post there Monday through Sunday. So at Jonathan Canlas, so J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, and then C-A-N is a Nancy L-A-S. Yeah, just go there, because everything else that you would possibly be interested in having, I have a Linktree thing and all. Like, I'm not, like I said, I'm not here to push stuff, but if they are interested, there's other things to be found in said Linktree. So
cool. And Timothy, what about you?
Guys, you can head over to Instagram and Twitter at Timothy Makeups. I've also been making YouTube videos again. I don't know if you've guys seen,
he's back.
Go over to YouTube. The easiest way to find it is go to the search bar. Just search Timothy.makeups. That's me. You'll find a bunch of old videos there that I'm still super proud of. And some new stuff. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. I do some YouTube stuff here and there as well.
You do.
We are Analog Talk Pod on Twitter, Analog Talk Podcast on Instagram, and we have a Facebook page and a group.
Facebook Join page it. And a group.
Yep.
Man, and a group. This is legit. It's a legit guest.
It's still, we don't do much on the page anymore, yeah, but the group is still cool because people like, you know, hang out and chat and post and stuff.
Cool, man.
So
awesome.
Yeah, thanks again, Jonathan. This has been wonderful.
Thanks for having me. Let me geek out about 8x10 acros.
Yes.
Yes. Still crying about it right now.
Because who else can I say that to? I'm like, oh man, I'm so excited about this 8x10 acros. My wife is there like, I don't care.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think all of our significant others are like, okay, cool.
Great. How much did that cost?
Yeah.
Really?
Like, why is there more film in the fridge?
Why is it so big? What are these big cardboard boxes? It makes no sense to me.
Oh man.
Oh my God.
Awesome. Anyway.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Bye.
First off, we want to thank Jonathan Canlis for being on the show. You were definitely a bucket list, wish list guest. We're so thankful for all you do for the film community with your lab, with Fine in a Box, with Fine Meaning, all the stuff you're doing. It's really awesome. And we're super glad we got the time to chat with you today. Guys, that's going to take us to the Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. There is a couple things over there to help us out. A bunch of tiers. You can get some prints. We're doing live streams. Some after show videos for you guys to check out. Any little support helps the show. Guys, also, if you could head over to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast and leave us a review, that makes it a lot easier for, you know, people to find the podcast. It makes it a lot easier for searchable, you know, reasons. So head over to iTunes, subscribe, leave a little 5-star review. That would be awesome. Tell us how much you love the show. Guys, until next week, we will see you soon. Later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.